This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
It takes a lot of hard work to make it look easy. This Mother's Day, Duluth Trading Co. can help you give her something that keeps up. Whether you prefer to shop online or in-store, Duluth has a motherload of gear, goods, and gifts to keep her comfortable and capable, no matter what needs doing. With Duluth's problem-solving details and legendary durability to boot, you'll finally be mom's favorite again. Check out DuluthTrading.com for all your Mother's Day gifting needs.
Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parenting Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because, let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parenting Hell with...
Daddy!
Let's sing together
Daddy.
One more time.
Yeah?
Can
you
come on my mum?
What?
Can you come on my mum?
Pardon?
Can you come on my mum?
Yeah. Can you say... Josh Widdicombe.
Josh Widdicombe.
And Rob Beckett.
Rob Beckett.
There we go.
Lovely, efficient after the poo.
Yes. Oh, is that what that was?
I thought he said quite my bum, didn't he?
Oh, is that what he was saying? Yeah, I couldn't make it out. Hi, Rob, Josh and Michael. Please meet Liliana, who is...
Ooh.
Who is 45 months old. That is not how you...
That's got to be banter.
That's got to be banter, hasn't it? What's that? Almost four.
Almost four.
As you hear at the start, Lily was busy attending to her needs, as she normally is in the evening. No matter what, she always wants me to attend to her needs after the job is completed. I tried to persuade her to call her mother, but will always refuse if I'm home. It's my chore. Best regards, Matthew S.
Matthew S, who is 124 months old. I'd love to know our oldest listener. If you think you're the oldest listener,
oh, yeah,
let us know.
Oldest listener, yes, please.
Oldest listeners, please come. And I want your age in years and months.
Yes.
That'd
yes.
be good. Because we might have two people that's 78 and we just need to find out who's the oldest 78-year-old.
Exactly.
My dad's
exactly.
76 and listens. Can you beat
oh, well,
that?
Oh, there we go. That's the... Do any of you remember the Blitz? Do email in.
I could get a bit dark. Maybe don't keep it less off the war, you know.
Yeah, right. Do any of you remember... That
winning
exciting
the World Cup.
Time after the Second World War.
Yeah, when you could have three eggs a week.
Exactly.
What a time to be alive. I had a routine about that. My dad used to go, oh, you can leave your door open. I was a kid. No one will nick anything. I said, fuck all to nick. There was nothing to nick.
Well, we didn't lock our door for the whole of my childhood, Rob. We
I know, but, yeah, but you were in the middle of nowhere, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. People going in and out of each other's houses in the East End. We were all family in those days, Rob, weren't we?
In Darty. Darty more. Josh, how's your week been, all right? Any news?
Oh, yeah, I've had a bit of an issue.
Oh, no.
I've lost some of the balls to hungry, hungry hippos.
Oh, God, they're just starving hippos now.
Yeah, they're stuck.
Something
to eat.
Absolutely,
yeah. I don't know what to do because there's no...
they're
I don't
so
want to have to buy a whole new hungry hippos.
Just buy some little balls.
But where do you get hippo... food.
Hippo like, balls? Where do you get hippo balls? You can find
them. Where do you get hippo balls? Where do I buy hungry, hungry hippo balls? If anyone's got any spare hungry, hungry hippo balls, I'd love or knows how to source them.
If you need our hippo balls, I'd go to Wuhan wet markets.
That's how this whole problem started, mate.
Then know a guy. Okay, well, that's literally
all that's happened.
I got a question. When I used a lollipop man when I'm dropping my daughter off at school with my daughter to cross the road, but when I come out of the school and I'm on my own, he still stops traffic for me. On my own, as an adult.
Amazing.
Is that allowed? What's the rules on lollipop man usage? Are you allowed solo adult?
Yeah, but it's a bit demeaning, isn't it? Because he obviously thinks you can't use a zebra crossing in your own right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, there wasn't. No, there is no zebra crossing on his one.
Oh, I see.
He's roughshotting it. He's going bareback just on
the
road.
He's rogue.
Yeah, mate. He don't give a shit, this guy. No crossing. He's just on there.
Well, I don't think then you should be allowed to, because you're an adult. You should have to wait until the traffic calms down.
Well, I don't. I mean, I'm not pushing this.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to go at you. That's what I'm saying is, if I was in a car and a lollipop man stopped me at a non-crossing, and then, you know, TV's Rob Beckett just crossed the road, I'd presume that you brought your own lollipop man as a kind of act of prima donna. I saw that Rob Beckett. He's brought his own lollipop man to cross the road. He's that much of a star.
Well, imagine that, having a lollipop man everywhere you went. But I do think the lollipop... But I think maybe if I've just dropped off at school and I sort of know him, he does it for me. But do you think he just does it to random adult men? Because you don't know who's dropped off a kid and who's just going to work.
Yeah, of course, I suppose. Yeah, I don't know. And is he doing it on the way to, like... Is he doing it all day? Like, can he just go anywhere?
No, he does just school hours. He's not there for, like, 8 hours.
Can he go on the M25 and just with his lollipop? What's the ruling? How strong is the lollipop? Do you have to stop at every point?
I think you could take a lollipop onto Heathrow runway and the plane would stop. I think it's just inbuilt. It's inbuilt. You see a lollipop, man, you're stopping.
Yeah.
It's old school, isn't it? Lollipop man's really survived. Or lollipop person, lollipop lady, whatever. The lollipop, that's nothing. I don't think that will ever be replaced.
No, it's the greatest invention of all time, isn't it?
A robot can't do that job. There's nuances.
A robot lollipop. Yeah, exactly.
The nuances of what's needed for a lollipop man.
Do you chat? Do you, like, acknowledge? How does it work?
I'd say good morning and thank you.
Yeah.
Nice. Or how's it going, mate? You all right? He goes, yeah, all right. It's hard when you're in motion, you know what I mean? It's not a stop and chat vibe. Because if you're stopping to chat, the road users are fuming. It's like Insulate Britain. Before I know it, I'm trying to get the country insulated.
I think if I cross... I don't know if I've ever used a lollipop man, because obviously I haven't taken my children to school, but it's one of the kind of things that happens and I think everything's going to be all right with the world.
Yeah, it's quite nice, isn't it? The lollipop man thing, just like, he's there for us and keeping us safe. Old school, boomers love it. Boomers love a lollipop man.
If you remember the first lollipop man because you're that old, get in touch.
My granddad used to be a milkman with a horse.
Did he?
He didn't use the horse for milk.
Not horse milk.
Horse milk.
Two emails and then Paris Fury.
Okay, I've got one, you have one. This one's a good one about boomer parenting fails. You know, we talk about old school parenting.
Yeah.
And I think we should open this up for boomer parenting fails. Send them in. This one's a cracker from Lee. L-E-I-G-H. Lee. Hi, Rob and Josh. Listening to your episode about boomer parent behaviour reminded me of all the stuff my dad did, which he called character building.
The worst
one was when I was around 4 years old, shopping in Woolworths with my parents and aunt and uncle. Whilst waiting for my mum and aunt to pack the till, my dad told me to hold onto the pillar in the entrance and to hold on tight, because if I let go, then the building will fall down and kill everyone inside, including my mum.
Oh my God, no. No.
I was terrified of letting go. And when my mum finished paying and tried to get me to leave, I wouldn't budge and just stood there crying. My dad was sitting outside with my uncle watching this unfold, laughing hysterically, whilst my mum had to pry my hands off the pillar. Safe to say, I've grown up to be pretty resilient, despite not having kids of my own. I wonder why I haven't had them. I'm loving the podcast. So thanks for all the laughs. Keep them coming. From Lee. That is a brutal bit of boomering.
Oh my word, that is brutal. That's the kind of thing that just will stick with you forever whenever you see a pillar.
I know. Luckily, Wolves went under, because at least she could have a breather then. Next time she goes into the high street shop. Oh, thank God there's no Wolves. My work here is done.
Rob, would you like... Do you know what we haven't done in a while? What would Rob Beckett do?
Okay, here we go. Why I've had that for a while? Because I feel like I'm unravelling.
You're unravelling.
I don't think I'm as in control as I have been recently.
My toddler's gone into what we call zero logic mode and constantly has tantrums over the most ridiculous things. This morning, I was yelled at for 10 minutes straight for taking too big a bite of her pretend sandwich.
Oh, my God.
And she or I can't make another one, as we're apparently out of pretend bread. Earlier in the week, it took a couple of hours to calm her down after my wife was showing her pictures of her 6th birthday party when she was a child back in 1981. She had a complete meltdown because mummy hadn't invited her. No amount of logic or explanation prevailed. And it's very difficult, that, isn't it? Any advice?
Well, with a photo one, I'd say you can't explain it to them because they can't get it. I'd go, yeah, you wasn't there because you were here, and show them a photo of something they really enjoyed with other people. You were doing that.
Right.
That's what I do with the girls when they do that. They're a bit older now, so it's easier to explain. Yeah. But I do that. With the fake bread thing, you've just got to go really hard on imagination and just pretend to be driving a massive bread truck. And yes. I think that's the wrong way, because but it's the easiest way out, because you're just playing along with that game. So like what I've been doing at the moment, I'm having a bit of a standoff with my five-year-old, because she's got a nativity, so she's learning the song. So what they try and do is go, I need to sing it to you. She's been singing it at me, but keeps going, I need to do it 8 times, because she knows that eventually wants to wind me up by keep doing it. Yeah. So that I go, no, that's enough. And she goes, oh, but no one will listen to me. So what I start doing is I go, oh, is it only 8? Why can't we do 10?
Oh.
And then her head's gone, because she's lost control of that. And she's like, oh, no, 8. I'm like, no, let's do 10. And then she does 8. I go, let's do one more. She goes, no, I don't want to. And then she runs off.
Oh, very good, Rob.
So I don't know if I'm damaging her, but
you're winning now. That's the main thing.
We're winning now. I have her holding pillars up in Woolworths next.
Now, Rob.
Yes.
It's a big moment, isn't it?
This is very exciting. It's a big special announcement time, guys.
Yeah. I'm having a... No, I'm not.
Josh, what are you doing on the 31st of January, 2022?
Well, do you know what, Rob? I have got it blocked out in my diary.
Are you going to be in Hackney?
I will be in Hackney. I will be 10 minutes from my house, actually.
I'll be in Hackney as well.
Yeah, well, we should meet up for a pint.
Well, how about we do something else? Okay. Why are we dragging this out so long? Yeah.
So we've decided to dip our toe in the waters of live podcasting, which we've heard is a very popular area, but we'll see how it goes. We're dipping our toe in with a one-off gig at Hackney Empire. It is January the 31st, 2021.
And it'll be the live version of this show.
We'll have a guest. We'll have various things.
We've also got a little sneaky way for you to get tickets as listeners. Basically, if you want to get a ticket first, they go on sale Friday the 26th of November at 10 a.m. However, if you sign up to our mailing list, you can get exclusive pre-sale access on Thursday the 25th at 10 a.m. So what you need to do is sign up to the mailing list, and then we will email you a code and a link to use in order to buy the tickets a day early as a thank you.
It says in this email I've got, to get exclusive access for pre-sale for listeners of the podcast. Who is coming to this that doesn't listen to the podcast?
I know. But anyway, this is what we're doing. We're going to put the link to the mailing list on our Instagrams, and it's going to be in the bio of the Parent in Hell Instagram page. But I've got to read it out, Josh, and I think we're going to get criticised for this. Yeah. parentinhellpodcast.mailchimpsites.com.
That is unbelievable. All our mocking. It's catchy. We're the worst. I'm going to repeat it just in case. I'm sure you got it. So it's Parenting Hell.
Yes.
Podcast, all one word. Dots like a full stop. And then mail, as in M-A-I-L, not as in men. M-A-I-L, chimp, as in a chimpanzee. And then sites, and that's plural, sites.com. It'll be in our bio on Instagram and on our Twitter.
If you sign up to that, you'll get an email to let you know how to buy tickets on the day before general release. So sign up. Also, we'll be using that mailing list, I imagine, for if we have any other things that crop up, like merch
Thursday the 25th at 10 a.m. We won't spam you.
Well, I think you need to do this if you want to get a ticket, because I imagine it'll get sold out on the day before, potentially, if it goes.
What I've
heard
is that they've had to bring in the computers that they use for the Glastonbury sales day. That's all I'm saying.
Really?
That's
okay. Well. Good luck, guys.
That's the news I've heard. Yeah.
I'm very excited about it as well, Josh.
I can't wait. I'm really excited. It's going to be a brilliant night. I might have a bloody beer.
Well, yes, this is what we need to talk about. When do we start getting pissed? It's got to be...
January the 27th?
Yeah, okay. Wicked. All right, then. Well, thanks, guys. Please sign up, and hopefully we'll see you at the gig.
Now, it's very exciting, Rob.
Yes.
You were very excited about this booking, weren't you?
Oh, I love Paris Fury. I love Tyson Fury.
I had a thoroughly good time.
She's great, isn't she?
She's brilliant. Her book is out. It's called Love and Fury, The Magic and Mayhem of My Life with Tyson. Why not buy that, along with R2 books, if you haven't bought R2 books, etc. This is Paris Fury.
Paris Fury, everyone. Paris, you have been one of the most requested guests, I'd say. Also, congratulations on being a Sunday Times bestseller.
Congratulations.
We've got your book here.
Thank you.
Love and Fury. And people have been... You've been one of the most popular guests they've asked for because your life and the kids, the parenting you do is off the chain. How many? For the listeners that don't know, please can you give us a rundown of how many kids you've got and their ages so we all know where you're at?
Well, we started out kind of normal. We have now six.
Six.
We did have... Two, one, the oldest is 12, the next one's 10. And then okay. for a few years, that was all there was. And then all of a sudden, we've got a 5-3-2 newborn.
Whoa. So wow.
We caught up pretty quick.
Yeah. 5-3-2 newborn. And can we go for their name? They've got incredible names, Paris. Can we have their names? Do you share their names to be full?
Yes. Yeah. We've got Venezuela Linda, who's the oldest. Then we've got Prince John James, Prince Tyson Luke. Valencia Amber and Prince Adonis Amaziah. But before I sound absolutely crazy, let me confirm that the boys aren't actually all four Prince. Yes, on paper they are, but the real thing is that when we had Prince, it was me. I got a bit like, I think I was a bit, you know, high on all the epidurals and the things and the gas and air. And I took this thing in my brain like, oh, we've got to call him Prince. Like all along we had John James. And then I decided we've got to call him Prince. He's got to be called Prince. So we did. And then Tyson evidently said afterwards, well, we can't have one. And they've got to all be princes now. So that turned into an ongoing argument until I agreed that, yes, we'll put it on the paper. But obviously we do have Prince, Tyson and Adonis. They don't get them.
Yeah.
Titles as such.
No. Fair enough. Well, because I remember seeing, I'm a big boxing fan, so I've sort of seen you in IFL interviews and in your documentaries of Tyson for years before you started your own, like, you know, writing your books and appearing on telly, a sort of personality. And I remember he used to have Venezuela on his shorts, but now he's got so many. Does he just not have their names on his shorts, or is he doing, you know, he's going to run out of fights to have all their names on his shorts?
I think they're kind of stitched in different places. I remember last time he showed me like he had a jumper and they was all stitched around his sleeves. And I went, you've missed some of them. And he was like, no, look, turn it over. There's some there. So, he is running out of space on the clothing to get the names on.
Do you shorten those names or do you go... what's the shortening of Venezuela or do you go for the full name every time?
I go for a full name. I don't really like... I don't really like cutting it short. I think whatever your name is, you should stick by it. So, yeah, she gets Venezuela. The lovely little girl's Valencia. And then the boys is Prince, Tyson and Adonis. The only one who does get a nickname is Little Tyson. It seemed completely surreal to call this tiny little baby Tyson, especially when you look at the dad. So for a long while, he got Tutty. But now we've got to stop that because I am presuming eventually he's going to grow into a big, big young man himself. And to be called Tutty seems a bit...
I don't know. I'd find it. If he does become a boxer, he could. Tutty Fury actually thinks more scary because it seems he's gentle, but obviously he's going to be a big unit.
Also, if he grows as big as his dad, no one's going to take the piss out of him for being called Tutty. No one's going to.
You never know. They might do it behind his back, but no, I don't think they'll stick it to his face.
What I found so intriguing, Paris, is like the setup you've got with the six kids, and you sort of are almost like part-time single parent. With the way boxing works, is for people that don't know, Tyson will be off for like sometimes three months at a time in Vegas, and you are doing it all on your own. So how do you have help with that, or do you do it on your own, or how is that when it's just yourself?
No, I do it on my own. I kind of have this thing that I don't really like getting help. I don't like getting help out of the family. So, like, my mum will come sometimes and have a week with me, or she'll watch the kids sometimes when I go to see Tyson fight and that. But I don't really like to have strangers watch my kids. So I've always chose just to keep at home and keep with the children. So it's been... it's definitely hard when he goes away. I wrote about this in my book because I think there's a lot of parents, not just for boxers, Any people who go into big high-level sports like footballers, boxing, whatever, this takes people away from their families. Also, you've got people who's in the army, people who work on oil rigs. So they all have the same sort of situation that you, at time, are left as the single parent. And I think it's even harder when you do have that stability of, right, there's me and Tyson and the kids, and he'll do half the school run, and he'll do the doctor's trips as well as I do, and I'll do the dentist, and we juggle it. But then all of a sudden he's gone. And when he's gone, it's like, oh, my goodness, this is so hard. And so it is. And as the kids are getting older, which I think most parents find, there's so much more to do. There's so many different, like, yeah. they've got their after-school
oh,
clubs.
Don't tell me that. Weekends. I don't want to hear that.
Oh, it gets hard. And now,
no.
like, you've got, oh, you've got young kids.
Yeah. yeah. I know it yeah. can't get harder, can it? Surely
no,
not.
It really does. But you know
oh,
what?
My
old parents, just to say this, and my old aunties and grannies, they say, oh, you don't know what it is. When you can tuck your kids in bed at night time, that's the easiest time. And I keep looking at these little ones thinking, oh, would just please grow up a little bit, like stop with the night feed, stop running around, stop with all the trauma. But then my girl who's 12 has now got like her piano lessons, her social friends, her parties she wants to go to, and then it's just a whole new ball game. So imagine when they're teenagers, it'd be like, whoa. So yeah, we definitely, when Tyson's at home, we split the load. And then when he goes, yeah it is definitely hard. It's
yeah,
really hard.
He's very hands-on at home, isn't he? He does a lot. So in a way, that must be harder when he goes, because with footballers, for example, I think because they play all year, all the time, you're sort of used to being on your own. But because he's at home for 4 months non-stop and then away for 4 months, it's quite feast or famine, isn't it?
It really is. That's the difference. That's what I find. And I think also the fact that I don't have childcare. I don't have like nannies or as such. I do have a funny story about the nanny situation, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of got like, when I had the three in 2.5 years, obviously there was three of them.
Three in 2.5 years?
Yeah,
I can't even do the maths.
No, I had baby Tyson, and then because we'd had difficulties before getting Tyson, because obviously I had the first two really easy, then we had this big problems in between, which I discussed about in the book, which was I lost one quite far on, and then it was years of trying to get pregnant again. So when I had Tyson, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to keep going. Well, we did, and we had Tyson, Valencia and Adonis within. Well, Tyson was 2.5 and Adonis was born.
Oh, wow.
So I thought to myself, I thought, you know what, it was really hard for a few years. Then all of a sudden I was pregnant with Athena, and I thought, I might actually, you know, I might try this nanny scene, you know, I might actually, you know, give into it. So, well, everybody I know, like loads of people I know have them, and they're like, you don't have childcare. I'm like, no, I don't have childcare. I just do it on my own. So I thought, you know what, I'll try. So I got this really high class sort of nanny who was very well experienced, and I asked her to come for an interview. So she came to the house and I brought her in, and she wasn't really aware of myself and my family and my situation. She said, how many children do you have? I said, 5, one on the way. And she went, oh, I've never worked with that many before. I said, how many? She said, 2. So I said, follow me in here. I'd like to introduce you to the kids. So I said, here's Venezuela, here's Prince, here's Tyson, here's Adonis, here's Valencia. Oh, just let me find Valencia, actually. You know, like, here they all are. She sent me an email afterwards. I don't think I'm suited to your post. So that was just the kick in the teeth. So I've never gotten that, and that happened again.
Oh, no, Paris. Oh, that's
a nannyable situation. That is
nannyable, unbelievable.
Yes.
And are they all in school now as well? Because I remember, because they're in primary school, I think some. But I remember you and Tyson have got slightly different views on them going to secondary school. Because I think in the traveller culture, is there a certain age when they don't go to school and they stay at home more? Is that correct?
Yes, in the sort of gypsy and traveller community, normally after primary, they don't go into secondary school because at this sort of time, they start getting homeschooled, and they also get schooled in like the ways of their mothers, their fathers, what we do as a family, and also for the fact that they travel a lot. So the school becomes obviously awkward to keep them in and out of. So, and that's for the greater traveling community as well. They travel a lot, and they can't keep the kids in the situation. So they do homeschooling. So all my kids, well, no, 2's in nursery, sorry. One's a newborn, 2's in nursery, 2's in primary. And my oldest girl has just finished primary and gone into homeschooling.
Okay.
So that is what we sort of agreed.
Are you doing that as well?
Well, no, I do have a tutor to do that. So
yeah.
I'm not that clever. I tried that during lockdown. We all tried that during lockdown as parents. Come on, admit that was a big...
Oh, God, that gave up after about a week.
And you had two, Rob. You've got two kids.
I lasted 2 weeks. I lasted a full 2 weeks of being the greatest teacher ever. And then I was like, every teacher needs a raise and I can't do this no more.
Yeah.
So she's in homeschooling and she's doing really good. We sort of agreed to disagree, me and Tyson. And
yeah, because he was very much the other way. He wanted them to go to secondary school, didn't he? I think that's what I got from... I think it was your ITV documentary I was watching.
Well, what we've agreed is that Venezuela's going to be homeschooled. She's still going to take all her GCSEs. She's still going to follow through with her education. Mm. And when she's... I actually just found out now that I've been going through the system that she can take her GCSEs sooner because it'll be a one-to-one schooling all the time. She'll be able to take them sooner and be able to start whatever she wants to do after that. Like myself, I went to college and I'd done a beauty course at 15, but because I wasn't in high school, I got to start at 15 instead of the other girls who was all sort of starting at 17.
Yeah.
So maybe it'll be an advantage to her life. I'm not sure. We'll find out. But it depends what she wants to do.
Exactly. It's all different. I just found it interesting that you had both had different views on it. And I was trying to find out who won the argument. But it looks like it's a sort of a compromise at the moment.
I think that's what it was. It was more of a compromise. It was a give and take. You know, we've got to, we like to keep traditions in our culture, but I think it's, you've got to meet the 21st century.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. I think it's a good way to look at it. I should say as well, your book, Paris, the photos in your book, I think it's some of the greatest collections of photos I've ever seen of on holidays and when you and Tyson are young. It's because you've been together for so long. It's remarkable, isn't it? Like, you was like 16, 17 when you met, and these photos are incredible. It just shows what a sort of loving family you've got. And it feels like the kids are the, as much as you two are both stars, you're writing your books, and Tyson's obviously one of the best fighters in the world. It's that the kids are the stars of your family, really. They're the number one priority.
When they're around, they definitely steal the limelight. But they are, yeah, our priority above anything. And I think most parents would be the same. I think there'd be something wrong if it wasn't. Nothing else matters but your children, above anything else. What I mean is kids, first and foremost, come first. You know, like, yes, everybody's got their job, everybody's got their business, everybody's got their hobbies they like to do. But if it meant something bad towards your children, you're going to give that all up. So for us, the kids come first, you know. That's why they've been everywhere with us. If we travel abroad, they come with us. If we go, they've been in training camps. They've been all around Europe. When Venezuela and Prince was young, we literally traveled. I talked about that in the book. We talked about how we just to pack up and go as a family, because it was never like, oh, well, there's the kids, they're doing their thing, and we'll just do ours, or Tyson will do his. We went as a unit, and that's how we tried to keep that way.
Well, I've seen you on your Instagram flying to America, and it's just you with the kids. Didn't you fly with like six kids once?
Five. Five has been my limit, but I'm pretty sure at some point I'll fly with the six. Yeah, it was challenging. That's definitely challenging.
How do you take me through that? How do you even get that?
I think it's like a military process. You know, you've got to have the right amount of bags, the right amount of sweets given before you get on that plane. And yeah, it's definitely hard work, but what is it? It's 12 hours out of your life. You've got to do that big, long flight, and then we're there. But as I say, I don't have no one else to do this with. I choose not to do that, and that's what I wanted to do. So when Tyson goes abroad, it's been a couple of times I flew out to America or back from America, just myself with the children. But like most people say, I do get a lot of pat on the back for that flight. And I think I deserve it, because I see some people stressing with one, and I think like, no, one's easy. One's no problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a black belt. It's like black belt karate of parenting.
How do the people around you react when they see the five kids approach on the plane?
Well, I think it's pure dread. I remember we went once in first class. We all had our own beds. Now, normally we fly economy because it's easier. For me to fly in the normal seats, it's so much easier because they're all rowed up next to me. So this time, Tyson, somebody had booked our flights and we was all in first class. There was Tyson with me as well. So we went in and there's like, they're following in, and people's faces are like, oh my gosh, you're going to ruin our flight.
I've paid for first class and this has happened.
But because they fly so often, to be honest, the kids are really good. Mm. They're really used to it. So I think the first half hour when they was like climbing into each other's beds, that was a bit embarrassing. But once they settled down and they got the cartoons going again, no problem.
And then do you think, could Tyson do five on his own on a flight?
No, I wouldn't trust Tyson Five on his own in this house. I know, I did the other day. I actually done my book tour and I had to do 3 days out of the home. And if you've watched Cheaper by the Dozen, I was literally that mother. I kept ringing and saying, are you okay? Is everything all right? Are you all right? Are you sure everything's going good? Because like a couple of days I did take the new baby with me, and then the last day it was just Tyson with the six. And you know what? He owned it. He done it. But I think you're better for knowing that, obviously, I'm here always. Like, I have always got the kids and I'm always juggling them, where Tyson does go and come. So, like, I think as that parent, he does do it, obviously, but yeah. I've got to admit, I was worried. I was worried.
But it's hard, isn't it? Because like a baby, especially within a couple of months, like you go, oh, they sleep at that time, they wake at that time. But if he's been away for a month, then that's all changed. So he's got to learn it all again. It's hard. Because also as well, you're so matter of fact and confident. I find it really inspiring because, you know, it was quite traumatic. Your youngest, you was premature and you was in the sort of intensive care hospital for a little while. Is that right, Paris?
It's about right, yeah. When I had Athena, she wasn't premature. She was born on a regular date, but had a racing heartbeat, something I've never experienced. Apparently, it's very common in young children. And her heart was racing at like 300 plus beats per minute, which then was causing severe medical problems with her.
Yeah.
So we got blue-lighted to Alderley Hospital.
Oh, God.
And it was the first time I've ever experienced this, that she was in intensive care for so long. It was 2 weeks, like she was literally brand newborn, and it was such a strange situation. So we had a really bad couple of weeks, and it was very well, at one point she actually totally, like, her heart stopped, she stopped breathing, everything. She was dying on the table, and they came in and they resuscitated her and put her back on a ventilation tube.
Paris.
And
we went
through this. Like, Tyson was actually, everything seemed like it was going really well. And Tyson was gone jogging around the hospital. And I called him and I said, come back now, something's wrong. And he come in. And as he come in, they was resuscitating her. And I was stood screaming. And it was obviously severe trauma.
Of course.
And this was just weeks before he was due to train to fight for Wilder.
It delayed his training camp slightly, didn't it, for the Wilder fight that was a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, well, normally Tyson goes out to America for a minimum of like 6 weeks, sometimes 8 weeks. And this time he never went out till the last 3 weeks because he spent the next 3 weeks training in Morecambe so that he could be near the baby.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't at home. He was out of home, but he was still only in Morecambe.
God,
just in case anything went wrong.
I mean, there's a real steeliness. And you obviously seen it with, you know, Tyson in the ring, and obviously what he went through with his mental health and his comeback. And yourself, you know, as much as he went through that, being married to someone and so close to that, you almost go through it yourself by proxy. And there's a real sort of resilience between you. And is that you both have that inbuilt individually, or do you find it like together you're quite a team with that to go through those kind of things?
I think we've got each other's back on that situation. I think... obviously, Tyson's been there for me when I've needed him, and obviously I've been there for him. And with Tyson's mental health problems, that was a long time I had his back, to be fair. It was a bit one-sided.
Yeah.
But we went through it, and everything that he went through has obviously made us stronger as a family and as a couple. But it was a very hard time for Tyson when he went through them problems.
And how was it with the kids when he was going through those problems? Were they aware what was going on, or were you trying to kind of shield them from it?
Well, at the time, we only had the two that was like 5 and 6, I think it was, but maybe six and eight, or around them ages. So they were still very young. So I, as the mother, I shielded them from that. They wasn't aware of these situations. Yeah. They wasn't aware of dad's problems. And like when dad went out drinking at times and things, they was obviously in bed sleep and had their bedtime story and was unaware.
Yeah,
but as
of course.
The partner, I was there the whole time. And I think as the partner of the person with mental health problems, you are there constantly. And that was one of the main reasons I actually wrote my book, was because I really wanted to give people the light to show how I managed with it and how I coped with all of that situation. Because I think obviously Tyson had friends, he's got his really great family, his brothers and his dad and that. But I was the one living it day to day on a daily basis. And I saw everything, and I was the one seeing him after 2 and 3 days of binge drinking or crying for 2 and 3 days with depression. And we went through it. So it was a very hard time, and it was very, very upsetting for me to watch Tyson debilitate that badly. But he come through it on the other side, and it made him a better person. I think he's so much better now than he ever has been with his mental health, because he's aware of the situation, and it's made me and him aware of everything. When he got diagnosed, we was now more open to it and understanding of it, where before me and Tyson was very naive to the situation, which I think is, for the greater world, I think that's what we're all starting to be more aware of, mental health issues, and being more open and learning to talk about it and support people with it.
Well, yeah, because I think that's kind of thing, especially big alpha, strong men. It's a strong, silent type. Keep it to yourself. And how was it, especially like the traveller community with opening up about feelings? Was it welcoming, or were people a bit suspicious about sort of, you know, talking about those kind of things? Or did you find it sort of, I think, from an outsider point of view, that I think it's done amazing work everywhere, and especially within the traveller community, because both of you are such, I don't know, people to look up to about how to sort of, you know, deal with things in the sort of modern world.
I think you have got a point there. I think we've got friends that's in the travel community or the non-travel community, both of that sides. But people who knew us really well was very naive to this situation. And I do think it's helped. I know that there's been many, Tyson's had a lot of phone calls and messages and thousands asking, how did you deal with it? And I've been suffering for years in silence. And the best thing to do is talk about it. And it was the same with me. I had literally thousands of messages asking me, how did you deal with it? Yeah. How did you deal with Tyson? How did you deal with his depression? And I can't say I've got the right answers for everybody, but I put it in words in the book so that people can see how I deal with it, because I can't answer everyone individually.
Yeah, of course. But yes, it's amazing, the book. It's all in there. Brilliant.
Yeah, and I just think it gave that base to show people that you can be strong. And there was times literally when I didn't feel strong. There was times when I wanted to run away. There's times when I wanted to leave and think, I never signed on to be here. And like, I didn't want to deal with the situation anymore. Cause obviously for me, I was the woman at home, and Tyson was out partying. He was obviously drinking. There was substance abuses that I wasn't aware of. I found out in the papers. So I had all that to deal with and to try and still put on a brave face. And it was really hard at times. And I kept thinking, like, you know what, I just don't want to be here. But if I knew, if I wasn't there, Tyson wouldn't be here today. So yeah. I stayed, and obviously we got through it together. And that was our way of dealing with it.
And the situation now, are you watchful? Like, how does it work in that kind of situation? Because you say you've got through it. But what do you do to kind of stop that occurring again and stuff?
I think with mental health, it's something that's always there. And I think that we recognise the symptoms more. Tyson recognises his own self now when he feels a bit low, and he knows that exercise works for him. He knows that keeping a routine works for him. So I obviously keep that push. Like last year when we went into lockdown, it was the COVID lockdown, and we'd done the workout videos. I had no wish or desire to do a workout video. Like yeah. There is not going to be a Paris Fury workout DVD releasing at Christmas, I promise you. But it was that I knew that the gyms was closing. You was possibly getting locked in. We was possibly on the breach of, like, nobody was leaving their houses. So obviously Tyson had to do his exercise. And what I thought was, you know what, I'm going to get up with you. And he said, do it with me. So, like, we'll do it together. It's better when you're together. And I thought, you know what, I will get up and I am going to do the exercise video with you, because I know it'll keep you fit and well. That was why I got up and done it. You know, I thought every morning, I thought, you know what, and a half an hour's workout ain't going to hurt me. It'll give me a bit of a boost, but it'll definitely help you. And that was how it come to start. And that was my version of supporting him. That's how we worked through it. And that's what I recognized the thought that he's getting upset. He's going to be depressed about this. He's going to be down if he can't do his exercises. Boom, we had the answer. So
yeah, and it helped a lot of people as well. People loved that in the lockdown. Your kid actually went viral. I'm not sure which one of the boys it was, but got viral. You had a little bit of a family bicker live on Instagram to about, 100,000 people.
just casual, like, he came in. And there was all of them wanted to do the exercise. So the day before, they all joined in. Well, then the next day, more of them tried to join in. So, like, we had the four or five of us all in there. And Tyson, big Tyson, just blew and said, like, get out, this is stopping it, get out. So when he went out, obviously, he turned around and he gave us a load of abuse, and he decided he was going to swear live on camera. So I, like, ushered out the room and, like, no, you can't swear, and you're on TV and you shouldn't be swearing. It did go viral. But I do have another little story that didn't get caught on camera. They missed. It didn't go viral. My boy, who was four at the time, maybe three, came in with his trousers round his ankle, underpants as well, and a roll of toilet roll. And he come walking in behind me, and I caught him in the side of the camera. And I was like, ah! You know what I mean? And I ran out. And he was like, wipe my bum, mum. It was like so normal to him, but obviously that one didn't go viral. They didn't catch that. The viewers missed it.
Oh, God, thank God for that. You don't need that going viral.
Yeah.
Poor kid.
But, he'd be forever known as the toilet roll kid.
Looking at like these, the photos, as Rob says, are amazing. There's a great photo of you guys with the rock, and like, and even in that photo, I'm like counting up the kids, and you're like, oh, there's another one in the corner I hadn't even seen. There's like, how often when you're going out, you must be doing head counts every moment of the day, right?
Yeah, that is. I learned that trick from my mum. I was one of four, and my mum used to just count us 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, now I do that, but it's starting to get hard because you get like to five, and you think one's missing. Where's that one? And like, have I counted you already? A bit like Home Alone when you count the heads.
Yeah.
I'm a bit OCD with the kids. I like to know that they're quite close by. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's easier that way.
Are you stopping at six? Or are you going to go for more? What's the plan?
The honest truth is I would love to have more. I always wanted a big family, and I think I'm only 31. Ugh, choke on that word. But I think, like, yeah, I've got a good few years to think if I wanted more children, and I could. But when Athena was born and she had her health difficulties at the time, which, thank God, everything's perfect now. But it was such a scare, and it was the first time in my life I ever literally wanted to cut myself in half and be with my kids at home, who were all worried and kind of aware that something was wrong.
Yeah.
And then also be at the hospital with Athena, which was where we was. Me and Tyson never left there for 2 weeks, but I did also want to see the kids. And they came over to the hospital, which then completely upset me. So people in that situation, I can't imagine what they're like when they go through like months and months or years and years of ongoing treatment with other children and children at home. So my heart goes out to them, because I was only there 2 weeks and it was so hard.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's difficult. That's the thing, when you've got lots of kids, you can't be everywhere at once if they need you, can you? It's all right if one needs you for one thing, but then if something else happens to another, you feel like it's hard to spread yourself around, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, obviously, like I said before, there's so much going on with like all their after-school clubs and their lessons and their things that they do, and their friends, what they want to go now, like to the park, you know, because I don't know what's so exciting about the park for a 12-year-old.
Yes.
But I've got all that to come, and I just think, will there be enough of me and Tyson to juggle all that situation if I keep having more children? So I'm not sure. I would love more, and my granny had 8 kids, and it was never a problem to her, and she said it was the best thing she ever done. So I always look and think, big families are beautiful, but I don't know, I'm on the fence now.
Fair enough.
I love that you've got 6 kids and you're going, I do quite fancy having a big family. And me and Rob are going, I've got 2 and it feels like a big family. Do you know what I mean? I'm on the fence about having a big family. Mate, you've got 6 kids.
My friends all say this to me. They're like, what are you on about? And I'm like, but I don't know. It doesn't seem crazy big. Like, I don't know. I doesn't feel like, I think I'd probably feel overdone if there was like 20 of them in here. Then I'd feel all right. But
that squish and a squeeze.
Just nothing. Yeah.
And do the kids watch Tyson fight? I know you go over to watch. Do they watch him in the boxing, or do they watch the repeat?
No, they watch him live. The little ones are all just asleep, but the bigger two have watched it for the last couple of years now. When they was little, I kept them away from the boxing sort of scene. They knew their dad boxed, and they saw like some of the repeats, but I didn't tell, like, my mum always used to watch them, and she used to say, should I get them up? And I'd say, no, leave them sleep, just let them see it the next day. Because I don't think it's something, like when Tyson fought Otto Wallen and he had that really big cut.
Yeah, that was quite bloody, wasn't it?
It was really horrific, and the kids watched that and they was crying and it was upsetting for them. And I think being in person, that's why I've never took the kids to the fight. They've only been to one. And that was a big flop. That was terrible. One was playing on the phone, one kept asking for food and the toilet. So I said, never again. You're never coming again.
Which fight was that?
It was Tyson's comeback fight in Manchester.
Sefa Safiri, that guy.
And the two, Tyson said, it's only in Manchester, bring them. And I said, no, they shouldn't be at fights. I don't believe kids should be at fights. Not for their dads anyway. Different watching as a fan, watching someone else, if they wanted to go, which they haven't, but if they did. But to actually watch their parents fight, I think it's a bit horrific.
I mean, that one was a bit more safe because it was a comeback fight. But, like, you know, even with Tyson beating Deontay Wilder, he's taken a few really sort of horrific punches that he's come back from. But seeing that happen to your dad's not a nice thing to see when you're young, I imagine, you know?
No, 100%. I've seen children at boxing rings. It's up to everybody's individual thought. But I've seen the kids of them around us at ringside, you know, when their dad's boxing. And It ain't nice. It's not nice to see their dad getting punched, because I've seen some little kids there crying and things, and I think this is where you shouldn't be. Like, you shouldn't be here.
Yeah, because it looks it's way worse ringside than it is on the telly. It looks brutal on the telly, but in the room, there's a different energy and feeling, isn't there?
Of course, yeah. And you've also got the feeling of there's like always at the fight. There's me, his brother Shane, his brother Huey. We always sit right next to each other. And, like, the dread on our faces would just upset anybody sat around us.
Of course.
You know, like, we are just to pieces. And the nervous energy coming off of us would severely, I don't know, scar the children. So I just don't think they should be there. But they do watch the dad, and they're totally aware that he's a boxer and everything that's going on. And they love it. They love to watch it now and support. But I still think there was always that thing. I wanted to keep that gap there.
Have any of them been to a boxing gym or done any boxing or anything?
My girl, the oldest girl, used to say she was going to be the next Leila Ali, and then she got to about 10, got punched in the face and said, no, I don't want to be a boxer. So I think she learned. She was sparring with like one of her baby cousins and she was like, no, I don't want to do this, no.
Yeah.
So I said, like, that's you out the question. And then my boy Prince has no interest in boxing at all at the moment. I don't know if he ever will. Tyson has said he wouldn't push the kids into boxing. Neither would I. Neither of us will push them into anything, really. Whatever they choose to do, that's what they're going to do. But Prince has no interest. He really likes wrestling. He loves the WWE, which obviously Tyson went into mostly for Prince, mostly just so
yeah,
he could
I saw
show
that
them
he
it.
Was in Saudi Arabia, wasn't he? He was actually in the main event and fighting in the WWE.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Yes.
And he literally did that for his son, really, because he mentioned that. So he sort of, it was mainly because his son, he loves it so much, basically.
That was
boy.
It, yeah. My Prince was about 8 at the time, and we was in America, and Tyson said he got asked to come down to the WWE. So we all went as a family. That was where we met The Rock. Lovely man, by the way.
Yeah.
And we went to the show, and it was amazing. Like, I couldn't believe the fans. That, you think, like, the fans back here are crazy. The fans for that wrestling show is unbelievable. So we went there, and Prince just lit up. And Tyson said, you know what, I'm going to go into this. Like, we'll do this for a bit. And, like, he loved it. He went to all the training facilities and met all the wrestlers. And that was really why Tyson done that.
Oh, amazing. But no boxing then. But that's the thing. I don't know. I think you could watch your partner fight. Seeing your kid fight is a different level. How would you go and watch, or would you stay away?
Well, I've got this sort of like thing that I like to be there. If I'm not a runaway, if the kids fall over, I run straight to it. Like, I've got friends that if the kids fall, they run the opposite direction. Like, oh, I can't deal with it. And I'm like, no, I run straight into the problem. So it's the same with Tyson. When Tyson fights, there's been very few times like, I can count on one hand how many times I've missed these fights. Even though I don't like it, I hate being there. I hate the whole fight. It's nothing enjoyable. Yeah. But I like to be there for him. So if the kids ever did box, I would definitely be there. But I know it would feel even worse. So I can't imagine what it feels like. Because I remember when his brother boxed, his little brother Huey boxed first. And I went to see him. And obviously I've known him from being like 9. And I saw him fight, and it was worse than watching my husband fight. I got more upset because I was thinking, like, oh, the baby, even though he's like 18 or 19 at the time. Oh, the baby. So I can't imagine what it's like if my boys box.
God, yeah.
I don't think the girls will, because, like, my Venezuela instantly said she didn't want to do it anymore. And then Valencia, she's like a fairy princess. So unless Athena shocks us all and she becomes the heavyweight champion of the world.
We'll find out. Well, but, you know, Tyson was born, wasn't it, month prematurely and weighed a pound? And then he went on to be 6'9". Is that true, Paris, or is that folklore?
No, he was born 7 weeks, 7 weeks premature.
Whoa.
He was really premature. He died 3 times in the incubators. He was really ill. Yeah, his mum had a real bad time when she had him. But obviously, they said, I think that's where his dad's told a story before of where Prince, they said to him, that's how he got the name Tyson, because he said he's a fighter, he's going to fight. Because the other boys all have normal names, John, Shane, Huey, they have like old-fashioned traditional names. And then there's obviously Tyson, who was named after Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Because, it's unbelievable. Because, you know, there's such an inspiring story. Because a lot of people, when they have premature kids, they sort of think, oh, God, they're going to be big and strong, whatever. And, you know, you can't get much bigger and stronger than the, you know, heavyweight champion of the world at 6'9". You know what I mean?
Definitely. So. It's an amazing story. And the thing is, a lot of people think that Tyson's name isn't even his real name. They say, oh, his real name's Luke.
Yeah.
But it isn't. His name all his life, he was Tyson Luke Fury. That was... his middle name was that, and that's what my baby boy's called after his dad.
Yeah.
But people say, I know that Dillian White keeps emphasising, oh, that's not his real name, he's just changed it to make himself sound scary, but it really isn't. He was called that name because he was born premature.
Yeah, and when you first met, didn't he tell you he was going to be the heavyweight champion of the world?
He did. I really looked at him like he had two heads and thought, oh, my goodness. But I suppose that's what kept me here all this time. I just knew he was different and he had this personality and belief in himself.
You said that to Lou, didn't you, Rob, when you first met her? You said
I'm going to be heavyweight champion of the world. And she said, no, you're not.
She's still waiting. She's still waiting.
I mean, because I don't know, but, you know, obviously Tyson's just your husband and all these stuff he's gone and done. But, you know, do you roll his eyes? You roll your eyes a little bit when he's playing up and stuff like that because you know him so well. Like with the singing at the end when he wins, do you still enjoy that or do you find it awkward when he sings to you? Because it's an amazing moment when he's just had this massive fight in the middle of Vegas and he turns to you and sings to you. Like, do you still find that romantic or do you get a bit awkward with it, Paris?
No, in the ring when that has happened, I'm just so pleased and ecstatic that Tyson has actually won the fight that I think, you know what, do what you want to do. You just go with it. He loves to sing up and down. I think it's his moment, you know, he's got his karaoke mic and it's like, yeah, I'm back again. But I think, you know what, you just do it. And then afterwards I look and think, oh, cringe.
Yeah. I think it's amazing. I love it.
It's the aftermath of something like that.
Well, you went viral with the way you looked at Tyson when he was getting these belts and his acclaim. And it went viral
that's so embarrassing.
A couple goals, but you were really doughy-eyed. You loved him. You could tell how much you loved him in that moment, just watching him get all this acclaim and stuff like that, which is incredible.
You know the truth behind that moment? I'm gonna like ruin it now.
Go on.
The truth is, I was really nervous. I was so nervous. And I was biting my lip with nerves and like it looks so cringy.
It does look like you're really, you've had a couple of wines and you're really into him, but actually you're just nervous.
Yeah, I was really nervous and I was looking at him and I was so proud. I was that must have been true. Yeah. But then the other thing, I was looking and he had a really bad bruise on the back of his head and I was thinking, oh my goodness, that's really bad. We've got to get him out. I've got to get him out of this ring, get it ice on it. And like, obviously people have not seen that side of it. They have just seen this really, really weird kind of raunchy looking fighting. And I'm like, no, that's not what was happening.
No, okay. But yeah, that's the thing, because, you know, he did win that fight, but he took a lot of heavy blows to the head. And sometimes the adrenaline keeps the fighter going. But when they get back to the dressing room and the cameras are not there, that's when you can really see the injuries and stuff.
Yeah, that's the truth. And obviously, like, Tyson had two big black eyes. He had bruises all over his head. I mean, these fights are brutal and people don't see that. And the next day we was out, and that night we was out partying, and the next day we went to the big pool party. But if you notice, he had his shades on most of that day. Yeah. I mean, he looked pretty beat up. So it's not nice to see your loved one like that.
No, of course. Imagine being your little boy. God.
Yeah, what do they think when they see him like that?
The baby kids don't really understand. And then the big ones, I presume, they just think, well, dad's won his fight and he's had a fight.
Yeah.
I don't think children at this age really understand any sort of danger that's going on with the sport.
To be fair though, he's never really been beaten up that much, like too bad. Like, you know, some fighters have a real, but he's had tough fights, but he's won every fight he's had. So, and he's, you know, he's never really took a, you know, a beating. No one's ever beat him.
Exactly. I did used to say this, that it was easier to watch Tyson's earlier fights because he was fighting obviously opposition that he just went through like a wrecking ball. Like he literally just, he never got hit. But then in the last fights, obviously he's world level, everybody that fights him world level. So the fights are more well matched and it is hard to watch Tyson fight on that level because, like you say, he's always won and he's always come through it. But now he's not coming through without a scratch, put it that way.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Wilder's unbelievable power. But with now your life's changed so much, really, you know, and not only is there sort of more money, there's sort of acclaim, and, you know, you're a Sunday Times best-selling author, you know, your husband's world champion of the world, you've got some money, your life's changing. How do you deal with that with the kids and they're growing up with famous parents and successful parents?
We are trying to keep them as grounded as possible. It's difficult. It is hard because the situation.
Well, one's called Prince. It's quite hard to keep a prince grounded.
No, he's probably the best one out of the lot because he's proper puppy dog. He's real, he's real soft, that prince.
No, but it's hard to keep him grounded, isn't it? More.
Yeah, it is hard. I think what we're finding at the minute is that we we're trying to keep them some sort of normality on money. Like, right, you've got so much money, you can go and buy this with it. Try and save your money, earn your things. You need to buy a car, you need to buy things. Because obviously when they turn like 17, 18, I don't want them flying up and down in dad's Lamborghinis and Ferraris and things. These kids are going to buy their own cars. They're going to learn how to work and earn their money. And that's what I want. That's what I'm trying my best to do, me and Tyson. And then you've also got the fact that I don't want them to be, you know, like, oh, we're celebrities, or obviously everywhere they go, people know them. So it's hard to balance this, and we're only learning. The other thing that's difficult is just to live a normal life. For us to live in Morecambe, which is where we're at the minute, and that's easy because everybody's known us for years here. So we're not nothing special. We're not like, oh, wow, here's Tyson and Paris, here's the kids, here's, oh, my goodness. It's just normal. And, yeah, people say hello and they get a picture, but that's it. It's not like a big ordeal. But when we go to towns, cities, zoos, fairgrounds, anything, there is no normal life. Yeah. There is no
There's no second normality. Check. You're definitely Tyson and Paris Fury with 6 feet. There's no, it's not like, oh, is it them? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's difficult to keep your head down, isn't it?
I'm on my own and I put like a hat on and I walk through, nobody really notices. But then they see the six kids following behind and it's like, hold on a minute. Yeah. They've got a big family. And then they look and they know it's me. But Tyson can't hide at all. Mm. Like, there is no... Like, other people who's like mega famous footballers, movie stars and things, I've been told, like, oh, they just put a hat on and they can blend in. You can kind of like snoop through, but Tyson cannot, because obviously from being 16, he's been a giant and people notice him straight away. So that's been a bit hard to deal with, to be honest, with the kids and trying to find a bit of way to just live a normal life. But I'm trying, we are managing it. It's so far, everyone who meets the kids, they always say they're really polite and well-mannered. And I'm hoping that maintains until they're older.
And do you think they'll want to stay in Morecambe? Like, do you think you'll stay in Morecambe for the foreseeable?
I think so. I mean, obviously we could go anywhere in the world, but I can't see us leaving very far, to be fair. We like it here. We had no intentions of basing here, to be honest. We came here when we first got married 13 years ago. And it was always meant to be for a short stint of time. And then we're still here now 13 years later. So I don't think we're going anywhere.
Fair enough,
is nice. It's quiet. It's reserved. It's just a normal little town. There's not that kind of like fast pace that you get in like big cities like London, Manchester. There's just like, it's quite out the way. It's in the sticks, to be fair.
I think that's why, when it is so crazy and busy and you're in and out of Vegas and all around the world, it's nice to have that sort of solid base. And it's good for the kids to have someone they go to where it's normal, you know, and that's just where they grow up and they know everyone and stuff like that. And what about your kids? You know, Venezuela, you said, is doing her GCSEs and home tutoring. Would you like her to go to university, or would you like her to do her own business, her own sort of thing? Or is it just whatever she's happy doing, you're going to support?
That's exactly what it is. Whatever she's happy to do, whatever she wishes to do with her future, that's what I'm going to encourage. I want her to do well. I want her to study and I want her to work hard for things. But it's down to her what she wants to do. If she did choose that path, I think Tyson would be over the moon. He wants the kids to take like that kind of academic sort of path and see where they go. But I'm not sure. I don't know where it'll lead us to. I'm not sure what Venezuela will want to do, and the rest of them, it's up to them, isn't it? I do. Yeah. I'm strong belief in that. I think I'm encouraging the kids to do well, but to do well in what they want to do.
And do you think if Venezuela or the other kids, you know, got to secondary school age and said, "Mum, I want to go to school with the other kids," would you accommodate that? Would you, you know, encourage the home tutoring?
Yeah, well, we've done this. We went through this process with Venezuela. She was definitely set that she didn't want to go. She wanted to follow like what she wanted to do, and she wanted the home tutoring. Obviously, a lot of her friends has done the same of her age. Like half of her class basically went into homeschooling.
Oh, is there a big traveller community around in that area then where you are?
Yes, yeah, especially in their primary school that they went to. And then as for my boy Prince, Tyson's trying his best to like convince him to go to high school. You should go to high school. He's like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm getting a tutor and I'm going to do this. And I can't remember what he told me the other day he wanted to be. I mean, at one point he wanted to be a Crystal Maze champion. That was when he was about 6.
Sounds like Josh.
Nothing wrong with that. It's an ambition.
I remember him saying that. Yeah. But obviously now he said he wants to do the wrestling. I don't know if he'll follow it through, but he said if he does his homeschool and he goes to a wrestling camp and things, that's what he wants to do at the minute. But what am I saying? They're 10 and 12. What does anybody want to do at 10 and 12?
Are they physically big? Like, as Tyson's Do you say 6'9"? Has that been passed on?
He is. They're all tall. All the children are tall. Oh, except for Tyson. Actually, baby Tyson's the only one who's a bit more normal for his height.
Yeah.
He's probably like the tallest in the class, but not obscenely tall.
Yeah.
The other ones have all been... The big ones and the little ones below them are all like quite obscenely tall, but they're not big made like Tyson was. Tyson was like... there's a photo of Tyson when he's about 14, and Tyson's a big unit. Like, he was a big lump of a man. And he was only a kid. He was 14. When I met him at 16, he looked 25. He had a full beard. He had, like, giant. He was 6'6".
Yeah.
And I said in the book, I told the story, I said that I met him, and the first time I ever met him, I thought, why are you talking to me? You're way too old to talk to me. I'm 15. He grew bigger. So I don't know if our kids are going to be really as big as him, but... they're definitely big for their age.
The photo in the book of him, there's one with him with his Lacoste beanie hat on, where he looks like he's sort of like in a weird indie band with like a granddad shirt. And then there's one of him, he looks like some sort of Italian sex god with his long dark hair and a black shirt. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that was when I really fancied him. He lost that hair. As soon as I married him, I caused him to go bald. It was just terrible. when we first met him, that little photo in the book where he's wearing that like, completely odd get up. That was the first time I ever met him. So I don't know what I saw.
I mean, and you look, apparently.
Look at the size of his hand. It's as big as your head.
I know.
It's unbelievable.
You look very pretty. You're in a very nice going out outfit. You've got your hair done. You've got a nice watch and a necklace. You should not be getting out, going off with that man. I don't know what happened. He's got a lot of chat, Tyson. And then he turned into that bloke. Yeah, he must have had a lot of chat. It's unbelievable.
He's wearing
a
football shirt under his shirt. Like it looks like.
He was styling back then. No, then what happened there was actually had a fight. He told me, because I said, like, I couldn't understand, but obviously most of the people I'd ever met, boys and things, and I never had a boyfriend before I went out with Tyson, but the boys that I had met was always very well-groomed and sort of, like, prim and proper. Well, that was the ones that I'd always met. And then Tyson came along, obviously a big giant, dressed kind of really rough, like this really odd get-up. He had this, like you say, that sport shirt underneath a granddad shirt with an odd hat. And he had his little brother, 9-year-old brother's waistcoat on, like didn't fit him at all. And obviously, when I first looked, I thought, like, what is going on? But obviously, I must have been intrigued by him. So he came, but he explained to me, I come at the last second, he said, to this birthday, which was my birthday. That's how he came. And he said, I come at the last minute, but I've got to fight in a couple of weeks. I said, what do you mean by fight? And he said, like, I'm a boxer and I've got to fight. So he had on his brother's little coat to keep him warm and a beanie hat and a scarf, all on the process to box, I presume. So there was kind of reason why he looked so scruffy.
Fair enough.
Kind of.
It was in camp. Let's just say that. It was in camp. In camp.
Because you talk really brilliantly about Tyson's mental health problems. But one of the other things you write brilliantly about in the book is... baby loss and losing a baby. And did you find that difficult to kind of go through again during the book? Because you've spoken really brilliantly about it as well, I think.
That was the hardest thing for me to write about in the book. That was the hardest thing I found to talk about. The reason I did talk about it is because I think people look at me and Tyson and we've got 6 children and it looks like we've never had a problem. It looks like you've never had children problems, which the truth is that we was complete opposite. We had the first 2 kids really easy. And then after that, we had child loss and we've had difficulties to fall pregnant again, which I talked about all of us in the book, because I think I find that with a lot of women, they're very ashamed of this subject and they're very quiet about it. And it feels it's extremely personal and that's probably never going to go away. It's an extremely personal conversation. And I played with the idea whether to put it in the book or not. But I do think it helps to know that other people have been through the situation. And I think it's great to read or to see or to know that I've been there before you. You're not the only person who's living this situation. And to look at the fact that, you know what, I went through all that hard time and now look, I had the kids straight after and I've got 4, and I'm moaning about it. So it can come the complete opposite. You can go from like all these troubles and all these worries that I went through for like 5 years between Prince and baby Tyson, thinking I would maybe never have another child again. And obviously always knowing I wanted a big family.
Yeah.
And then to the opposite way that I've now got 4 young babies and I've got my other 2 older kids and things completely changed. The situation changed. And I just think it's good and reassuring for other people to read stories of other people's lives and to know that things ain't always perfect and you're not the only one out there going through this and you're not the only person who's had a loss or had a problem or difficulties to conceive. It happens to a lot of women.
It's brilliant. It's so inspiring. It's such a brilliant book, and well done for being so honest in it, because I think it's going to help a lot of people, especially with that the baby loss stuff. And also on top of that, of, you know, being married to someone going through those mental health problems, because a lot of the time the attention's on the person, but not the person who's having to deal with the day to day. And I think it's quite important, because sometimes those people don't really get heard, and it's really good that they can in this book and connect with
it.
When I wrote my book, I realised
I've been through a lot of crap. An awful lot of crap. And I never realised it. I look at my life day to day now and I think, like, it's all rosy and, you get little ups and downs, but, everything's good. But then I read it all back and I was like, wow. But, like, to be 31, I've been through so much. Like, I look and I think, like, we have done a lot of stuff and we have, like, all that stuff crammed in. And it only when I actually sat down and read each chapter back to myself, I was like, oh my goodness. And there was a couple of chapters. It was during the depression when I talked about Tyson's depression. And I was crying my eyes out on the pages. Like, literally, I thought, how am I going to read this? Like, a lady come in, one of my friends, and she was like, what's wrong? What are you crying for? I was like, I'm just reading my book.
I'm just reading about my life.
It was really bad.
Yeah. Like, you must have read it and got that poor woman. Oh, it's me. Fuck.
Yeah. It really was. And I kept thinking, like, but I know it gets better. I know that this gets good.
Yeah.
But, it's brilliant.
Yeah. So I did. I've been through an awful lot of things, an awful lot.
I love the fact that the bit where there's six kids and you're looking after them without a nanny is the rosy bit where there's little ups and downs. Whereas me and Rob are here complaining about having two kids and how difficult it is.
I know.
You're like, it's all easy now. It's all a walk in the park.
Yeah. Just look at me on the day-to-day basis. Make you feel better when your kids are, like, really going to town.
And there's obviously going to be a film made about you and Tyson and the journey you've both been on together and all the kids. Who do you want to play you in the film, Paris? Have you got someone that would be the perfect person, or you're relaxed about it?
No, I want someone to be, like, way hotter than me. So, like, Margot Robbie, like...
Margot Robbie.
Go for it. If you're going for it, go for it. Yeah. Like, why not? Like, exactly. If I'm going for it, someone even better, like, with a perfect figure and beautiful face, you just go for it.
Yeah, Margot Robbie.
She can have my place.
Okay, we'll put the call in, Paris, and see if she can do it. Paris, and one last question before you let go. Thank you so much. We know how busy you are with a book and the kids and stuff like that. The last question is, we always ask every guest, is there one thing that your partner does parenting-wise that annoys you a little bit that you don't bring up because it will cause an argument? Is there something Tyson does that gets on your wick a bit with the kids?
No, I bring it up all the time. He'll say to me, I'll watch them. You go get a bath. I'll chill out with them. Here, I'll take them to the shop. Yeah. And at that shop, he buys them pop and sweets and lollipops and crisps and Coca-Cola. And then he comes back and goes, all right, yeah, here you go. It's bedtime, innit? Like, no. You've just put them on a severe sugar rush and you've ruined it. So we're bouncing till 12 o'clock tonight. Yeah, that's one of my pet peeves. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Brilliant. And Paris, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Paris. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Make sure you get the book. Good luck with it. Keep it in the charts. Paris Fury, Love and Fury. The magic and mayhem of life with Tyson. The money's worth the photos alone, especially that one in the Lacoste hat. It's amazing.
Yeah. Don't get the audiobook. The Lacoste hat's worth it for the book itself.
Cheers, Paris. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Thanks.
Bye now.
Paris Fury. I love that, Josh. That was brilliant. She's great, isn't she?
Feel bad about complaining about your dog now, Rob?
God, I forgot about my dog for a bit then. That was nice. No, I love the dog. Dog's all right. He's fine.
So amazing.
Unbelievable. Brilliant. I mean, I've sort of been aware of Paris because I'm a bit of a boxing nerd and she's...
Yeah, that does come across.
Yeah, she's a bit of a cult figure and now she's sort of like mainstream fame, but everyone sort of knew about her and loved her in the boxing circuit because she used to give great interviews about Tyson and the family and stuff like that. But she's brilliant. And like, I think that's nice for her as well to write the book and realise that she's been through a lot, because I think sometimes you don't until you put it down on paper and then you can sort of give yourself a pat on the back and go, bloody hell, look how good stuff is and how bad it has been at points, you know?
31.
30 fucking one. 30, you know when people go, oh, you've written a book at 31, why? There's fucking loads happened. Imagine how big this book would be if she was 60.
Do you know how little I'd done at the age of 31? Oh, what year was that? 2014.
Oh, nothing.
The most exciting thing I'd done is a couple of episodes of 8 out of 10 Cats. Do you know what I mean? It's like, fuck. fucking yeah. hell.
No, she has. She's lived a life. What a story. That was amazing as well. That poor, her poor newborn baby. Imagine that. Seeing that. Oh, anyway, it's terrible. But yeah, she's brilliant. And by the book, it's really interesting. The photos are absolutely outrageous. I love that one of Tyson. It was really interesting interview. She's a great talker, isn't she? The kids, how confident and articulate and talented are those kids going to be? Do you know what I mean?
Mate. And do you know what? After Sophie Ellis-Bextor and Paris Fury, we're not accepting guests with less than 4 kids. It's just unacceptable.
Put up or shut up.
4-kid minimum on this show.
4-kid min. And a quick reminder, guys, we are doing a live show of the podcast on the 31st of January 2022 at Hackney Empire in London. If you want tickets, sign up to the mailing list and you'll get a pre-sale exclusive link if you are a mail list member. So sign up.
Shall I read it out? Shall I read out the snatchy title?
Yeah, snappy title.
Parenting Hell Podcast. MailChimpSites.com. MailChimpSites. It's unbelievable. .com. Look, it's in our bio on Instagram. Go on there and sign up, and that will be Thursday or 10 a.m. is when the. For God's sake.
You're a details guy.
If I end up on QVC, I'm going to be their shittest presenter.
What would you fucking sell?
I would be so bad at The Apprentice, it's unbelievable.
No, anyway. I think I'd be really good up until I got in the boardroom, and then Alan Sugar ripped apart what I did, and I'd be the worst one.
You'd punch Alan Sugar. You'd get salty with Alan Sugar.
I'd go, all right, mate, yeah, giving it the large one. We all know you're on little blocks because you're so small to make you look bigger.
Yeah, you've got your jokes written on a piece of paper in front of you. I've heard about it. Anyway.
Do you really need to write down you're fired, you dickhead? Surely you know that's the end. Anyway, please sign up to the main list and we'll see you at the live show. Bye.
Bye.